Are you ready to become a better version of yourself, to become a leader in your personal and professional life? Then welcome to the CJ Evolution Podcast, where we put a twist on traditional criminal justice professions and provide you with the tools you need to set yourself up for success in your career and for the future. Now, welcome your host, the CJ Evolutionist himself, Patrick Fitzgibbons.
Hello, everybody. Welcome back. Episode 235 of this great and growing podcast. Great and growing because of you, the listener and supporter. Thank you so much for tuning into the show. I know you have many options. Thank you for spending a little bit of your valuable time with me, Patrick, here. I'm the host and creator of the CJ Evolution Podcast. This is a criminal justice podcast for the CJ professional like you, hosted by another professional in the criminal justice field, me. So thank you for tuning in. Special thanks to all those first responders out there, brave men and women. Whatever you're doing in the criminal justice field, we at the podcast thank you and salute you. You're doing a very difficult job in a very difficult environment. Keep up the fantastic work. I am super excited, like I've always said, for the last several podcasts. I'm very excited to be partnered with Four Sigmatic. If you don't know who this or what this great company is, they make some amazing products, most notably their mushroom coffee. If you head over to cjevolution.com, you're going to see a link to Four Sigmatic. You're going to get 15% off of your purchases using the promo code CJEVO. And really quick note, their mushroom coffee, it's not what you think it is. It's amazing. It tastes so good. I drink this coffee every day. It gives me that extra zip with very little caffeine. You're going to love the product. So head over there and see what they can do for you. I am so excited to have the next guest on the show. We all know in the criminal justice field that body language is very important. We all know, or we should know, that most of the communication we do on a daily basis is nonverbal. My next guest is a superstar when it comes to nonverbal communication and nonverbal cues. He spent a lot of time, many years, working for the FBI, and he's also a very successful best-selling author who's written 13 books on the subject of body language and nonverbal cues. For all the CJA professionals out there, investigators, patrol officers, who want to learn more about nonverbal cues and body language, this podcast is for you. So grab a pen and paper and enjoy this great and powerful podcast on a very important topic. Enjoy. Hello, everybody. Welcome back. I am super excited to have my next guest on. His name is Joe Navarro. He's a former FBI agent and best-selling author. He's got a total of 13 books out there, and his expertise is body language. Joe, are you there, sir?
I am indeed, and it's a pleasure to be with you, Patrick.
Oh, thank you so much, sir. Now, I don't know if I gave you due justice with that bio. You want to fill in the gaps anywhere, or is that okay?
I'm my mother's favorite son, and actually I'm her only son, so that's good enough.
Well, I know, you know, it's such a fascinating story. You're doing so much important work. We talked about it off the air a little bit. Now, I knew you were in the FBI for many years. What drove you to the FBI?
Well, you know, I had graduated from Brigham Young University. I went to work there in Provo, Utah. I graduated from the Utah Police Academy. A lot of people don't know this. I was a police officer in Utah for 3 years. And then I was very fortunate. The FBI recruited me. Mm-hmm. Never really figured out what they were interested in. Maybe they just wanted to get me off campus. But anyway, I ended up in the FBI at the tender age of 23. Mm-hmm. And then I spent 25 years, working at first on the tribal lands on the Colorado River Indian Reservation, the Havasu Indian Reservation. Mm-hmm. During criminal works, homicides, rapes, you name it. And then I went to New York, and after that it was all counterintelligence. It was just spy catching. So for 25 years it was really an interesting time.
Now, I know you have a book out there that I want to talk about a little bit. how you caught a pretty famous case, or actually an American soldier who was selling secrets to the Russians, correct?
Correct. Yeah, that story is told in 3 Minutes to Doomsday, mm-hmm. which is a real-life story of, unfortunately, during the Cold War, American soldiers, one of them who had received the Silver Star, incredibly, who were serving in Germany and decided one day to make money, they would start selling American secrets to the Warsaw Pact, and of course the recipients were the Russians, and of course the U.S. Army Intelligence Security Command did a exceptional job of catching identifying these individuals. But then came the hard part, which was, how do we prove this? Because all the evidence is overseas. The Russians have the evidence. And so
they're not giving it up.
No, they're not. They weren't friendly then. They're not friendly now.
Exactly.
And so, you know, how do you solve the case? How do you prove the case? And as you know, because I know you've read the book, you know, the first clue that we were onto one of these guys, and he was the right suspect, was when I went to interview him here in Tampa. And when I mentioned the name of someone that had been arrested in Germany, his cigarette shook in his hand. And I mean, to this day, I can still picture that cigarette. And it was almost like the polygraph needle just moving in his hands every time I mentioned this guy's name. And I thought, well, this is bizarre. Why would somebody's hands shake over the mention of a name? Mm-hmm. And so I told my supervisor, well, you know what, I want to pursue this. And he gave me the leeway. That led to, in the end, 52 interviews, and eventually he was convicted of espionage. He got 36 years. And, you know, and so this is, I'm glad you brought this story up, because I'm often asked, even by law enforcement officers who I have so much care for, is, you know, well, what do we use nonverbals for? And really, we use it to sense when something is wrong. And anytime we sense something is wrong, let's not worry about deception. Let's just pursue what would cause this individual to react this way. Mm-hmm. And so we did. And I lucked out. I had a wonderful team. And in the end, we ended up prosecuting 5 spies in the United States and another 5, I think, in Europe. So we were very lucky.
It's amazing. And I didn't tell you, but thank you for your service, sir, to the FBI. And what's amazing to me, there's so many areas of your life. You're just amazing. You started keeping a journal of body language when you were 17 years old. What fascinated you with body language at such an age where most kids you can't even get them off the couch, they don't care, and you're studying body language, which is amazing at that age.
Well, Patrick, this is one of those where I've gone back and forth, and in the end, I think it was at that age where I was starting to develop an interest in women, and I think I did it because, you know, I was keeping notes to see why is it that, you know, for instance, if somebody's interested in you, they would play with their hair, or you know, why would they look a certain way? I really don't know why. What I can tell you is that all of my friends made fun of me for keeping 3 by 5.
I don't think they're making fun of you now anymore. But a lot of kids aren't. They're not interested in that. I mean, I get what you're saying. You know, you want to be. You know, you're trying to attract the opposite sex. I get that. But most kids, myself included, I wasn't thinking about. Oh my God, why is that person? Why is that girl twisting her hair? I mean, that's just kind of. I think it's amazing because it led you to where you're at today. But that just it's amazing.
Patrick, I'm just an odd guy. They were trading business baseball cards, and I was just studying the world around me. But you know, I think in part too, it has to do with I'm very introverted. I'm very private. Mm-hmm. It really takes a lot to you know for me to perform, and so I think it was just my way of dealing with the world. You know, when I go back and I look at those 3x5 cards, and there's such curiosity, but also naivete. It's fun to go back.
Why don't we? We were talking a little bit about this, Joe, off the air. Why don't we spend more time? Well, two parts of this. So, why as a society? Because I think a lot of people don't. They don't pay attention to body language. I mean, it's just kind of, we take it for granted. And then we were talking about, and that's just my opinion. Why don't academies, because I don't know the percentage, you know, so much of our communication, daily communication is nonverbal. Mm-hmm. In law enforcement, you know, as well as anybody, it is so important for our jobs as officers. I don't care what level you're on, federal, state, local. Why aren't we teaching more of this in the police academies? And maybe states are, maybe different municipalities are. I don't see it where I'm at. We don't even talk about it.
That's a great question. And I think it's a deep question that needs to be answered. You know, the United States is the only nation that has 17,500 different police departments. Mm-hmm. Think about that for a minute. Mm-hmm. Each one, even though states set the peace officer standards and training, the fact is that, you know, some get as little as 8 to 10 hours of, let's say, interview training. Others may get as many as 22 hours, but not much more than that. Mm-hmm. When you consider, you know, and you and I were talking at length before, when you consider that the number one job of a peace officer, of a law enforcement officer, is to observe the world around them, to, mm-hmm, number one, have situational awareness, to have awareness of potential threats, to have an awareness of potential criminal activity, and then if they do intercept someone, to have the ability to read them, mm-hmm, for the purposes of obtaining lead material or to detect where information may be hidden or obfuscated or retained. I can't think of anything more important than mm-hmm, than developing this skill, and yet it is something that is rarely taught. You and I both know that the best investigators out there are not necessarily the biggest folks, nor the strongest, but they have observation skills and people skills, and they can get things out of others.
Yeah. I mean, it truly is amazing, and a lot of that maybe it probably comes. I remember when, you know, years ago when I went to the academy, we didn't talk about this. We're not talking about it that much, I don't think, as much as we should, but a lot of that comes with, you know, experience, and you learn these, how important nonverbal is. I just think it would be good to get a jump start on this in the academies.
Well, imagine if beyond just situational awareness, if you were able to develop the skills of, okay, you know, how we observe people affects them. So yeah, if we observe intrusively, that will affect it. Mm-hmm. But what is it exactly that we're seeing? You know, when we pull up to someone and all of a sudden they're doing hard swallows, or they're touching their nose or their mm-hmm, chest or the neck and so forth. We need to differentiate behaviors that say, oh, I'm surprised to run into a law enforcement officer versus that question you just asked me is causing me severe stress. Mm-hmm. That, you know, those things are significant. And I, you know, believe me, I'm not trying to gin up some work because I'm busy enough as it is. But I think every police department, every law enforcement agency needs to identify people that are good in this area and say, you know, why don't you come in and teach some classes on how we can better observe others? And I think everybody will be better served.
Because this goes beyond just law enforcement, Joe. I mean, you know that. It goes into daily. I mean, obviously, it's important in law enforcement, but, it goes into our private lives, too, right? I mean, being able to read people and being able to interpret body language.
Absolutely. I mean, stop for a minute. You know, the minute a child is born, it's communicating nonverbally. Mm-hmm. Our decisions as far as mate selection are based on nonverbals. We don't select mates because they gave us a curriculum vitae. We smell them, we look at them, we touch them, and that's how we select mates. And you know, in schools, I've interviewed dozens of teachers over the years, and they tell me they can sense when something is wrong, not by what the child says, because they're usually very reluctant, but through their body language. Mm-hmm. And I really think, and this is why I love your show, because you want to share information with the world, is that how much better we are as humans when we can sense that something is wrong, mm-hmm. and that then we can empathize or step in or somehow assist, or in those cases when something is seriously wrong, then be able to intercede and help out. Mm-hmm. It's really all about nonverbals.
Yeah. Now, you mentioned something earlier about, we were talking a little bit, we scratched the surface on deception. I want to get your take on, and how difficult is lie detection, Joe?
Yeah, I'm glad you asked that question, because here's what the research says, and we've known this since 1986 with Paul Ekman's great work. We are no better than chance, 50-50 at detecting deception. Now, I'm familiar with at least, I believe now it's up to about 12 or 13 studies, including meta studies that have looked at detecting deception. And yeah, some people, very few people, can rise above 50%, somewhere around 60%. But here's the problem. We're still at 40% of the time we're going to be wrong. And I have to tell you, as an agent, I didn't focus on deception. What I tried to do is create opportunities, and you know this from my books, where I asked questions, like the woman in Yuma, Arizona, who were looking for her fugitive husband, and I said, "Have you seen your son?" And she says, "No." I said, "Okay." And then, you know, when I asked, "Is it possible that without you knowing, he may be hiding in your house when you're not at home at work?" You know, and her hand immediately shot up to her neck, and she was covering her neck dimple, and she was massaging, and she did that three separate times. In that instance, I said, "Something is wrong here." Mm-hmm. And, you know, she gave us permission to search, and we found him. And actually, it was one of the most dangerous things I ever did, because in the closet, he could have shot us.
Yeah.
He chose not to, but I was very vulnerable. But here was a situation where we were using nonverbals, not to see if, for the purpose of detecting deception, but rather which questions cause her psychological discomfort. And that question, which had your son hiding in house, it was causing so much stress that she was touching her neck. So I think that these are the things that we look for that we can teach and do so effectively and make it safer for officers on the street. I don't think there's anything more dangerous, as you know, than officers who have to pull cars over and or who have to respond to domestic situations. Mm-hmm. Those are the great, that's where most police officers get killed. And anything that we can do to keep them safe, I'm all for that.
And you mentioned something, Joe, that really stuck. I mean, the whole story was amazing, what you just said. But can people control their nonverbal language? I imagine they can to some degree. Or is the lady who you just described, it was probably, she didn't even realize she was doing that, right?
No. Nobody, you know. I mean, if you're a world-class actor, maybe you can control some things. But whether it's your feet, whether it's your blood pressure, whether it's your pupil dilation, whether it's something as simple as a quick inhale of the nose like this and then pulling down on the upper lip, you don't really know you're doing these things, but these are the pacifiers that we use all day long when anything is of stress. So, you know, I think the gold standard now, and I think you're a proponent of best practices, which mm-hmm. is why I wanted to be on your show, is let's put looking for deception behind us, because there are more important things to be looking for. And this comes with asking good questions and then looking for behaviors that say, something is wrong here. I'll point something out to you, Patrick. Mm-hmm. I looked at the 261 original DNA exonerations, and these were cases that folks went back to, attorneys went back to and found that the DNA did not match these people who were on death row. Mm-hmm. That's 261 of them. But here's what's frightening. Every police officer and every prosecutor in those cases swore that these individuals had lied. But not one of them could detect the truth.
Huh. It's amazing.
And there's the problem.
Yeah.
And there's the problem. We think we can detect deception, but we are, you know, but we're really incapable of detecting the truth. And here were 261 people scheduled to be lethally and legally removed from the earth. Mm-hmm. And fortunately, DNA saved them. But not one officer could detect that, you know, this guy says he didn't do it. He's probably telling the truth. And that is sobering. And that's why I take the humble approach and people ask me, can you detect deception? Not very well. And I've been doing this for 40-something years.
Yeah.
What I think we can do, and we're very good at it, and as a parent, and if you have friends, I'm sure you've seen this, you get a sense when something is wrong. And when you get a sense that something's wrong, our job in law enforcement is to pursue that and determine why. Why are we seeing these behaviors, and is there more to it?
That's just amazing. Now, I know in your book, Joe, the Dictionary of Body Language, fascinating book out there. We'll have all your books linked up on the show notes. So any of your listeners out there, I know you're probably wondering, how can we find Joe's work? It's going to be linked up in the show notes. But can you talk a little bit about a head-to-feet approach to body language? You know,
and
can you share a few tips maybe, or a tip in each area?
Yeah, no, absolutely. And in fact, I'm going to reverse it. You know, I wrote the Dictionary of Body Language because I had all these notebooks full of behaviors. And in the books past, I had only written about 140 of them. And I had slightly over 800 behaviors. So I said, you know what, let me write just a real quick. And as you saw from the book, it's just one paragraph of these key behaviors from head to toe. But let me start from the feet, because the feet tend to be one of the most honest parts of the body, and we tend to ignore it, or we don't see it in interviews because sometimes there's a desk.
Yeah, there's behind a desk or something like that.
And I tell interviewers, you get paid to see the whole human body. Do not allow yourself to sit in a way where you can't see the other person because, for instance, sometimes when we are asked a very difficult question, and one in particular that can hurt us, we tend to withdraw our feet very quickly and very dramatically. Oftentimes we will orient our feet towards the door all of a sudden when we hear a question that is really very threatening.
Because you want to get out of there.
Because you want to get out of there, and your whole life you have oriented your feet automatically anytime you saw somebody you didn't like, somebody you fought with, somebody that you've argued with, someone you just didn't care. And so we have these shortcuts. They're called heuristics that do not stop at the interview room. And so these things are important. Now, it doesn't mean you're being deceptive. It tells the investigator, follow up. Right. Or here's one I've seen so many investigators miss where they ask a question and the interviewee grabs their knees and pinches them really tight, or they wipe their hands on their forelegs. These, again, are pacifiers that say, oh boy, I really don't like this question. Yeah. I'm bothered by this, and I'm trying to relieve myself. Or something as simple as they've had their hands on their lap or on the table, and when they're asked a question that they answer very affirmatively, instead of leaving those hands up in the forward position, all of a sudden they answer, but they tuck their thumbs into their pockets. Hmm. I can tell you right now that, and I talk to you as someone who has studied anthropology, our species, dogs hide their ears, humans hide their thumbs. The minute we lack confidence, we put our thumbs away. And so to have somebody give a formal declarative statement, but all of a sudden they're hiding their thumbs, oh man, we're going to revisit that question over and over again, because there's one where we should see confidence, but instead we're seeing a lack of confidence. Yeah. Somebody you ask a question, and all of a sudden you see something. I remember the first time I saw this, where the guy tucks both of his hands under his armpits, as though he's warming his hands in his armpits, and his arms are crossed across the chest. And I remember my partner later asking me and saying, "What was that?" Yeah. And I said, "That's a self hug. When you're in deep distress, everything's going to be okay.
Reassuring to oneself.
It's a very reassuring behavior. But the reason he's doing it is, when you asked a question, and I forget now, years later, what that question was, but it was obviously one that caused him great distress. Hmm. Well, those are the kinds of things that law enforcement officers need to, as I did, on the front page, on the front of the page, I would keep the notes as to what the person said. On the back of the page, I would put the behaviors that I saw. Mm-hmm. And I dared any defense attorney to attack me and say, why did you, pursue this, or why did you go that, or why did you think this individual? And I would just turn that sheet over. They grew to hate me. Yeah. Because I'm the guy that's making the observations, and then they would attack me by saying, "Oh, so you say my guy was lying?" I said, "I never said that."
You never said that. You just observed it.
I said I observed a behavior that is consistent with deep psychological discomfort, and it's a simple question. Yeah. Where were you last night?
Yeah.
And if that question causes deep psychological comfort, then I'm going to ask more questions, and I'm going to ask for permission to search the house, which he granted us. And
you get the evidence.
And we get, and we get the evidence because it was a very simple question. Yeah. And so as we climb up the body and then we look at individuals and their hands and we notice that when people are talking about the things that they did the day of the crime and we notice that they're emphasizing and their thumbs are popping up as with interlaced fingers and everything is fine. But then when you ask them, well, have you recently fired your Smith & Wesson? And all of a sudden you see those thumbs disappear. Mm-hmm. Stop right there. Anytime you stop a gravity-defying behavior and those upward thumbs are the exclamation points, mm-hmm. there's an issue there. There's an issue there. Why were you emphatic about, I went to the grocery store and I got milk and I got this. And then I'm asking you have you recently fired your weapon and now your thumbs have disappeared? No. We're going to spend more time on this subject. Yeah. And you continue up and I'm big on this of how often we touch our necks, grab our necks, massage our necks mm-hmm. when something bothers us. And you just gave
the example of the lady who you asked the questions and immediately she went to her neck.
Yeah, exactly. In fact, recently, if you saw the drone attack on President Maduro at that military mm-hmm. thing, you notice that all the soldiers stood at attention, but his wife immediately reached for her neck. This is a very primitive behavior. This is a behavior that we tend to do with no thought. It's very instinctive, and obviously we've passed it.
And you do that because you feel threatened, right, Joe?
Because you feel threatened, because the throat is the weakest part of the body. Mm-hmm. The water, the food, the air, the blood, the electricity.
All comes through there, yeah.
All goes through there, and we tend to protect it when we feel threatened. But very close to that, and you need to differentiate, is when you see, for instance, you ask somebody a question, have you had a recent fight with your girlfriend? And to answer the question, the person has to pull on their collar to ventilate.
Yeah, I've seen that before. Yeah.
Oh, yeah. The minute you see a ventilator, I want to know why. I want to know why, because I know that at about 1/250th of a second, your skin is already warming up to whenever you hear something that threatens you. Well, I need to pursue that because you just let me know that I need to pursue that. And of course, then we get into the mouth behaviors. And I think by now everybody knows about lip compression.
Biting
the lips and so forth. But the ones that I really like are when they begin to shift the jaw to the side. And that really lets me know that something is serious because, they need to stimulate the TMJ nerve. And you do that by jaw shifting, and mm-hmm. that just tells me something's really wrong. This guy's trying to pacify himself by mm-hmm. By doing that. So obviously we could go on and on. And what I liked about the book was that my agent, Steve Ross. At Abrams, who has represented me for the last 10 years, said, Joe, you've proven a lot in your other books. Why not simplify it here, but put more behaviors in here? And mm-hmm. so we put over 400 behaviors. And I would say about a third of these behaviors, nobody's ever heard of. Nobody's really done any research. And I did it because I know there are people out there like yourself. I know there's law enforcement officers who in the theater of life are going to run into things that no scientist will ever see in a classroom mm-hmm. or in a lab. And so I write for them. I write for the men and women who depend on these things, who will see these things, and then they can go back and say, I saw this guy and the space between his fingers was increasing at this particular point in the interview.
Yeah.
And that tends to follow people that are confident. So I wrote it for you. I wrote it for them.
Yeah, such amazing work, Joe, that you're doing. How can people find you if they want? I mean, I know you're all over the place, but can you tell people the simplest way to find you if they want to reach out to you?
Yeah, go to your podcast.
Well, besides my show, that'll be linked up in the. But you have your website. They can find your books.
My website, jnforensics.com, or they can go to joenavarro.net. Yeah. All my books are all the booksellers have them. Obviously, they're on Amazon, and so they can find it there, and you know, try to go to your local bookstores, because I admire local booksellers. Yeah. And I do a lot of travel, and every city I go to, I'll go to at least one bookseller and leave them some signed copies.
Well, Joe Navarro, I appreciate it so much, sir. I know you're a very busy man. Thank you for the great content and the great information you provided the listeners. I know that they're going to find it very beneficial. I could talk to you all day. Any final words for the criminal justice listener out there that you want to give them?
Yeah, you know, we in law enforcement are the archetypes. We are, in the end, the people that the public can rely on. And anything that we can do to be more humane, more respectful, more honorable, serves us all.
Well, thank you so much, sir. Much success to you in the future. And thank you so much for being on the show, sir.
It's my pleasure, Patrick. Thank you.
Thank you for joining us for this episode of the CJ Evolution Podcast. For more strategies for self-improvement and resources based on today's episode, be sure to head to cjevolution.com. You can also connect to Patrick directly on social media at @Pat_Fitzgibbons with any questions, comments, or concerns. We look forward to helping you find more personal success on the next episode of the CJ Evolution Podcast.